This is DW News, live from Berlin. Benjamin Netanyahu becomes the first sitting Israeli prime minister to go on trial as he faces corruption charges just days after beginning his fifth term in office. Also coming up on the show. Protests return to the streets of Hong Kong. Police fire tear gas at pro-democracy activists as they march against a proposed security law they say threatens the territory's autonomy. And in German football, Leipzig showed they're not out of the Bundesliga title race yet with a thumping victory over Mainz. We've got all the highlights coming up just right after this. I'm Aaron Tilton. Welcome to the show. An unprecedented trial has started in Israel, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu facing charges of fraud, breach of trust, and bribery. He's the first sitting Israeli prime minister to face trial in a case that pits Netanyahu and his supporters against the country's judicial system. And it comes just a week after he started his fifth term in office.
Not happy to be here. Netanyahu's lawyers had requested that he be spared this hearing, but the court disagreed. Before the trial even began, he lashed out at the justice system, saying he's the victim of a conspiracy. What stands for a trial today is the attempt to thwart the people's will, the attempt to topple me and the right wing. For over a decade, the left hasn't managed to do it in the polling stations. So in recent years, they've found a new way. Members of the police force and the state attorney's office have joined forces with the left-wing newspapers, I call them the Just Not Bibi Bunch, in order to set me up with ludicrous and hallucinatory cases. The prosecution presented its charges today. Case 1000, Netanyahu is suspected of receiving gifts from wealthy friends. Case 2000 covers allegations that Netanyahu attempted to influence a newspaper for more positive coverage. And Case 4000 alleges that he granted a series of favors to Israel's largest telecommunications company for positive media coverage. The Israeli public is sharply divided. Anti-Netanyahu protesters call him the crime minister.
The court is going to make justice and is going to send him to jail.
But Netanyahu's supporters turned out in force outside the court in strong agreement with his position. The court should be on trial, and not Bibi. Benjamin Netanyahu is a scapegoat. They couldn't beat him in a democratic way, so they took him to court. The opening session lasted about an hour, but the proceedings are likely to run on for years.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson has said he will not fire his top aide for allegedly violating national lockdown rules by driving some 400 kilometers to his parents' house at the end of March. Johnson said Dominic Cummings acted responsibly and legally when he traveled with his wife because he wanted to ensure childcare for his four-year-old son. Cummings and his wife were showing symptoms of COVID-19 at the time. The opposition Labour Party has called for an urgent inquiry into the allegations. Protests have broken out in Hong Kong after China sparked outrage with proposed new legislation that would ban what Beijing calls secessionism and subversive activity. Police used tear gas and water cannon after thousands of people took to the streets. Authorities say some 120 people were arrested. Demonstrators worry that the new legislation could allow Chinese security agents to operate inside the territory. Pro-democracy campaigners are calling it a threat to Hong Kong's autonomy. Earlier, we talked to Bernard Bosch, a senior expert in China and Asian Pacific affairs at the Bertelsmann Institute. We asked him what this new law could mean for Hong Kong.
This law is really a devastating blow to the freedoms and autonomy of Hong Kong. It is a big blow to the Hong Kong people who are now asking themselves, now that their political rights are being taken away, which are the other rights that are going to be taken away next. For example, Hong Kong still has free media to some extent and free internet. Is that going to be taken away? And of course, lot of the economic freedoms are also at stake now. So this is very dire for Hong Kong.
Let's take a look now at some of the other stories making news around the world. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has promised to release up to 2,000 Taliban prisoners as a goodwill gesture. His statement came after the insurgents offered a three-day ceasefire during the Eid holiday. He also urged the Taliban to free Afghan security personnel. German flag carrier Lufthansa has announced it will resume flights to 20 destinations from mid-June, including some holiday hotspots. The airline is beginning to restore business after demand plunged in March amid the coronavirus pandemic. Lufthansa's negotiations with the German government over a 9 billion euro bailout continued on Sunday. For the first time in months, Catholics gathered in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican for a traditional papal blessing. Pope Francis has been delivering his message from inside the Apostolic Library during the pandemic. He took the chance to wave to the well-spaced crowd in the square after Sunday's blessing. South Africa's government is lifting lockdown restrictions despite the number of COVID-19 cases still being on the rise. President Cyril Ramaphosa acknowledged that the pandemic would get much worse. The severe lockdown imposed at the end of March spelled economic disaster for huge numbers of South Africans. Ramaphosa said he was now moving the country to what he called a risk-adjusted approach, with the option of returning to regional lockdowns if necessary. Health experts have predicted South Africa's outbreak will peak in the second half of the year, causing at least 40,000 deaths. Let's hear what Ramaphosa said.
As scientists had predicted, the infections in our country have now started to rise sharply. One third of the cumulative confirmed cases were recorded in the last week alone. And we should expect that these numbers will rise even further and even faster. Various models have been built by model builders to predict the trajectory of the virus and to help inform our planning and budgeting. These models tell us two important things. Firstly, that the coronavirus pandemic in South Africa is going to get much worse before it gets better. Secondly, and most importantly, they tell us that the duration, scale, and impact of the pandemic depends on our actions as a society and on our behavior as individuals.
A man who survived a deadly plane crash in Pakistan on Friday has revealed what he remembers from the flight's final moments. Authorities are still trying to piece together why the Pakistan International Airlines flight went down in a residential area of Karachi. Just two of the 99 people on board survived.
Home at last, after a brush with death. Mohammed Zubair is one of just two passengers who survived Friday's plane crash. After we crashed, I saw so much smoke and fire. I heard people crying and shouting. I opened my seatbelt and looked around me, and I saw a tiny light, so I followed it. I walked through the plane and came out, and I jumped down from about 10 feet high and escaped. 97 others on board were killed when the flight from Lahore crashed in a residential area near Jinnah International Airport. Eight people on the ground were also injured and dozens of homes damaged. Mohammed recalls hearing the pilot mention engine trouble over the intercom before everything went black. The pilot announced the landing before we reached Jinnah International Airport. Later, the plane hit the runway three times, then came back up. The fourth time, the plane kept moving on the runway. I don't know why the plane didn't stop, but the pilot began flying again. On the final landing attempt, Mohammed recalls the plane violently jerking and then nothing until his miraculous exit. I am glad to see my family, to stay with them. I'm feeling very good. I have a new life. My mother's, sisters, brothers, relatives, and friends' prayers were with me. I am very thankful in this holy month of Ramadan that I got a new life. While Muhammad is just happy to be alive, investigators are still trying to determine what led the plane to crash, killing so many others.
Muslims around the world have been celebrating the end of Ramadan. But this year, celebrations for the Eid are subdued. The coronavirus pandemic means no prayers at the mosque, for the faithful, no family reunions, and no meal together to mark the end of fasting.
Eid Mubarak, blessed celebration, the end of the holy month of Ramadan. In Croatia, some mosques held Sunday morning prayers with precautions in place against the coronavirus pandemic. Traditionally, the focus of Eid prayers is to ask Allah for forgiveness and mercy, as well as peace and blessings for all living beings across the world. Happy Eid to all, Eid al-Fitr to all Muslims around the world, and especially to my children in Germany. Good luck. Now we go home, eat baklava, drink coffee in peace with family and relatives. Celebrating with family and friends and delicious food is an essential part of Eid festivities following the Ramadan fast. But here in the Philippines, as in most parts of the world, things are different this year. This is the first time since I was a child that I wasn't part of a congregation, that I didn't go to a mosque for the Eid prayers. This time we're just praying at home with our family. The Philippine government closed many mosques to worshippers, banned mass gatherings, and families were not allowed to travel to celebrate. Social distancing for Eid al-Fitr was not an option at this camp in Nigeria for internally displaced persons. Hundreds of thousands of people who've fled the conflict in the northeast now face the risks of the coronavirus in desperately overcrowded camps. I pray that God will ease the situation of those infected with the virus and protect those not infected. Faith is helping Muslims in many countries stay resilient in times of great hardship. In Syria's war-ravaged city of Idlib, parents were determined to offer their children joy on this Eid al-Fitr holiday. With the ceasefire holding, they defied the threat of the virus and celebrated the end of Ramadan in a pop-up playground full of delights.
The second week of the Bundesliga's return after the complete coronavirus lockdown has wrapped up. All of the matches were played before empty stadiums because of the pandemic restrictions. Sunday's matchups featured title challenger Leipzig up against a struggling Mainz. Both clubs maintained their trajectory in this one as Leipzig, thanks to Timo Werner, came up with a big win.
Transfer rumours continue to swirl around Leipzig sharpshooter Timo Werner. But it was his strike partner Yusuf Paulsen who took centre stage before kickoff. The Dane was handed the captain's armband as he made his 250th appearance for the club. And it turned out to be a banner day for the duo. Werner opened the scoring after 10 minutes. He took advantage of lax defending to guide home Konrad Leimer's cross. Shortly after, Paulsen marked his special day with a goal of his own. His header was too strong for Mainz keeper Florian Müller. Leipzig were in the mood. Paulsen was also involved in Leipzig's third goal. He set up Marcel Sabitzer, and the midfielder had no trouble finding the far corner. Leipzig were totally dominant going into half-time. The break did nothing to hamper their momentum. Werner finished off a slick move to make it 4-0. Kevin Campbell and Christopher Nkunku's build-up made it easy for the striker to double his tally. And Werner then completed the rout, latching onto Paulsen's long ball to complete the first ever ghost game hat-trick. A performance to remember for Werner. And a fitting way for Paulsen to celebrate reaching his milestone.
You're watching DW News. Quick reminder before we go that you can keep up to date with all the latest news on our website. That's